The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 6 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 14th of December, 2023. How you're keeping? Great to have you on the show this morning. It's dark out there this morning, isn't it? But we're getting very close to the shortest day of the year. And in this month, we start to see a stretch in the evenings, which is nice, isn't it? Well, anyway, we're going to keep your day nice and bright here on the programme over the next 3 hours and throughout the day here on your number one, Highland Radio. The lines are open for you right now. Lots of interesting guests and topics for you to get involved in. Raise your own, pass on your own stories, maybe your acts of kindness, anything you want to talk about or share. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, as you know. 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And of course, if you wish to email us, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And you can watch the program every morning. Good morning to Dolores. Good morning to Annie. They're amongst the hundreds of you across our various platforms that join us on a daily basis to watch the show. We're on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, so you can watch us on your big smart TV. Most TVs now are smart TVs. They have the YouTube app with them, or your Fire Stick. Many of you out there have your Fire Sticks as well, so you can watch the show on your big screen or across all your mobile devices. It's a Thursday morning, so that means there's lots of papers out, of course. And we'll start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. When the tricolour was finally removed from the Shane McGowan's coffin inside the church in Nina on Friday, it revealed an intricate pattern of willow that was handcrafted and woven in the heart of the Fanad Gaeltacht. The casket was handmade in Fanad by Colin McAteer and his Green Coffin Company. He said he watched the funeral with great interest and he was really proud of the skills of his weavers and that of the engraver Martin Clinton Carignaron, who's also based in Fanad. But never in his wildest dreams did he expect to see the Hollywood actor Johnny Depp carrying a coffin that was crafted in Fanad. As the breathtaking farewell became quite the gig for the dreamers and the believers, the funeral service morphed into an afternoon where the music spoke to the generations in St. Mary's, St. Mary of the St. Mary's of the Rosary Church, and the coffin stood in silent offer honour to a man who in life we love dearly and in death even more so. It's a great picture and beautifully written as always there. The Donegal, I'm in the Tyrconnell Tribune today as well. There's a picture in it as well. Thanks, John and team. The Donegal Democrat this morning, a former parish priest from Donegal who was charged with almost 100 historic sexual offences against a male victim, has pleaded guilty. Former cleric Eamon Crossan appeared before Donegal Circuit Court this week, where he faced 96 counts of indecent assault and sexual assault. The 72-year-old Crossan pleaded guilty to 9 sample charges out of the 96. The court heard that these were representative counts and guilty pleas were tendered on a full facts basis. This was accepted by barrister for the state, Mr. Donal Keane, BL. The Donegal News this morning, a lovely picture of a family meeting Santa Claus, 2-week-old baby AJ with big sister 7-year-old Kaylee, meeting the man himself at Carlin's Christmas Grotto in the Courtyard Shopping Centre. Below that, the owners of a Donegal pub which suffered major damage in a fire last week say they've been overwhelmed by the support and goodwill of the local community. Catherine and Paul Coyle, who run the popular Chactassi in Minalec, Crawley, say they're just thankful that nobody was hurt in the blaze which engulfed the pub and their home upstairs. They said the rapid response of fire personnel to last Wednesday's incident ensured that the fire was brought under control and the building was saved. On to the Derry News this morning. There are concerns over a drugs epidemic. Concerns have been raised about Derry's ongoing drugs epidemic. On Tuesday, a local judge asked the PSNI in the city to give him a comprehensive update on the seriousness of the drugs problem in the city. The recorder of Derry, Judge Neil Rafferty, KC, made the request after he sentenced 2 men for drugs offences, one of them for 3 years and the other for 18 months, suspended for 2 years. He said, "The drugs issue in the city is one that concerns me most deeply at the moment, and I would like the facts and figures put before me. I've read on Many of the papers put before me of people being taken to Outnagelvin Hospital, such is their state of unconsciousness because of drugs. Just how bad is the problem? And it's at epidemic levels, of course. It's worrying right across the region, but it's right across the country now, as we try and highlight on this programme on a regular basis. The Irish Farmers Journal this morning: fallen animals row escalates over cost of rendering. That is their headline this morning. The dispute between knackeries and renderers over recent significant hikes in rendering costs continues. Knackery operators have cut back on animal collections from farms, and some are refusing to facilitate BSE testing. It's estimated that up to 2,000 cows aged over 48 months have not been tested for BSE at knackeries due to the strike. Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConnellogue has not yet intervened in the standoff, but is advising knackeries to deliver fallen stock to Northern Ireland for rendering at their own expense. Okay, time now to go to the national newspapers this morning. And we'll start with the Irish Independent. And I wonder how many men might be inclined to go down this route. How many women might trust men to do it? I don't know. But a group of British men are the first in the world to test a new hormone-free male contraceptive pill. Scientists hope that if the tests are successful, the daily pill could broaden shared responsibility for contraception between the sexes. Men can currently only use condoms or have a vasectomy, while there's a vast array of contraceptives for women, including the pill, the coil, a contraceptive injection, and use of diaphragms or female condoms, among other options. The new male pill is a hormone-free drug, unlike the female pill. And guys out there, would you take it? Would you take it every day? And I suppose your partners, would you like to hand over that responsibility to the fellas? Let us know. 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000. The Irish Times: broad global welcome for COP28 fossil fuel deal. Now, that's if you completely and utterly ignore the countries in the world that are most susceptible to climate change. If you ignore them, then there's a broad global welcome. I just find it really interesting, and I know there's a climate crisis. I know things are changing, and I know some of you disagree with me, okay? But I do. I feel it's quite evident that's what's happening. But what I don't feel is evident is that really the powers that be are making any decisions that costs them anything. All the decisions they make seem to cost us. There's been 28 of these COP meetings now with people from all over the world, flying from all over the world into some luxurious place or other to be wined and dined for 2 or 3 weeks. Look, people in the oil and coal business use these events to actually lobby for more favourable agreements. And then what happens is it's all done and dusted. And then they try and sell it to us, don't they? They try and say, look, isn't this amazing? We've made a historic announcement. But what in reality does it mean? It doesn't really mean, for me anyway, someone hasn't related it to me where it feels like what they did over in Dubai has any consequences for the earth or for me. And I don't mean me in a selfish way. You know, when I say me, I mean us. Well, a landmark agreement reached at COP28 calling on countries to accelerate a global shift away from fossil fuels this decade has been broadly welcomed throughout the world. The compromise deal reached at the UN climate talks in Dubai also calls on countries to scale up cuts in carbon emissions and to quit adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere entirely by mid-century. Unless it's gas, of course. Natural gas, you can keep using that. That's a good fuel, apparently, even though it releases green, although it releases toxins for the world. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: ministers have been told to bring forward plans to start spending a war chest of almost $2.5 billion on capital projects as the government faces into three major polls. Work on new flood relief schemes, roads, cycleways, hospitals and school projects paid for with windfall taxes will be started next year. The coalition is also set to launch a pre-election assault on Sinn Féin, with the opposition party struggling in opinion polls in recent months. One government TD told the Irish Daily Mail that officially the war chest move is to put shape on the capital spending programme, but in reality it is the firing of the election starting gun. Local and European elections are due to take place next June, with a general election predicted to be held around November, immediately after the budget. There is no point in building up billions of euro through careful management of the public finances only to let Sinn Féin spend it, a Fine Gael TD told the Mail. Now, I've heard representatives suggest as much. You know, we'll start it, let them finish it. But anyway, interesting, 2.5 billion. If you got things like the Bonagie Link sorted and the hospital sorted, would you be complaining either? I don't know. The Irish Daily Star today, Minister Anne Rabbitt, she was on this programme. She's been on the show a number of times. She does shoot from the hip. Junior Minister Anne Rabbitt said her experience of being a widow with three young children prompted her concerns about changes to support for Ukrainian refugees. On Tuesday, she told TIP FM that changes agreed by Cabinet following proposals from Integration Minister Roderick O'Gorman were unpalatable, and that she found that it's a difficult one to swallow. It was agreed that from early in the new year, accommodation for newly arrived Ukrainian refugees would be limited to 90 days. While they are in state accommodation, the social welfare allowance will be cut to 38.80 a week, down from the 220. An addition of 29.80 will be given per child. But she says in her experience, she doesn't really feel it's fair. I wonder, is this something that business owners across the Northwest are experiencing? It's in the Sun today. Gangs of shoplifting teens who believe they are above the law are causing mayhem nationwide, a Dáil committee heard. Shop owners say the boom in robberies costs the retail industry $1.6 billion a year. The Oireachtas Business Committee yesterday heard how organised criminals are even sending their children into shoplift because they believe there's no punishment for underage children who get caught robbing. TDs and senators heard how around 1,000 instances of shoplifting are reported every day, with robberies on the rise. So, as I say, I wonder, is this something that business owners across the Northwest are witnessing as well? And individually, it might be seen as petty. I'm not suggesting it's petty crime, don't get me wrong. But if it's happening lots and lots, then obviously it's very, very significant. And I just thought I'd mention this out of the Irish Daily Mirror, because there's oftentimes issues where there's a big hoo-ha, loads and loads of conversation. People have their views one way or other, and then it kind of slips in and people wonder, well, when did that happen? So I just thought I'd reference this for the record. Justice Minister Helen McEntee has received Cabinet approval to draft legislation to allow Gardaí to use facial recognition technology. So despite all the concerns that were out there, the Cabinet has agreed to draft legislation that will allow it. FRT has been a source of contention in the coalition, with Green Party TDs expressing concern about previous plans to legislate without full scrutiny. They also had concerns of it being coupled with body-worn cameras, so that's changed, so they're happy enough. It's been suggested it will save thousands of Garda hours by allowing the use of biometric identification to retrospectively search CCTV. And, of course, it was all fast-tracked following those riots in Dublin last month. And because everyone was really worried about the riots, the Cabinet have got it over the line, so to speak. So that's going to be a thing going forward. All right, that was a run through the papers. We're going to be speaking to Mary Coughlin shortly. She made history becoming the first female chairperson of Donegal GAA. She's going to be joining us on the programme in the not-too-distant future. And we say congratulations to Mary Coughlin after her confirmation in the role of Donegal's GAA chairperson. What an introduction. Good morning to you, Mary. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I know what I wanted to say, but it didn't quite come out as I planned. Mary, there's just absolutely no doubt that you've achieved an awful lot in your life, and there's an awful lot of highs in there. Just curious as to where this ranks in, I suppose, becoming the chairperson of Donegal GEA, and how significant, I suppose, is it your first woman to become chair of Donegal GEA?
Well, I suppose I'd prefer if this wasn't about me, because this is about a collective,
yeah,
which is the GEA and the committee. But like, I've always been a GEA person, as you know, and the GEA is very much part of where I come from in the parish of Inver, and I've had huge associations with the GEA. Unfortunately, in my time, I wasn't allowed to play football, but everybody else in the house did, and people would have known in GEA circles. My Uncle Austin would have been very involved, even at county level. and I have a young fellow who still plays for St. Noel's. So, you know, I've been always very much part of it, and it's part of who you are, and it's about belonging, and it's a voluntary organisation at the end of the day, which some people forget. So it's something we all enjoy, and you know, there's fun in it, and there's enthusiasm, and there's competitiveness and enjoyment. And for a lot of people, it also provides an opportunity for people to meet up, you know, people that might be on their own, enjoy football and can have something to talk about. And it's just very much part of who we are, and it's embedded in who we are as Irish people, as well as our language and our tradition. So that's where I've always come from, and it's always been part of my life, and it's very much part of my household now. So I was asked some time ago, as you probably would have heard at the convention, if I would put my name forward. And at the time I thought, look, I haven't had enough experience. I enjoyed being in the club and learning the ropes. And it was after this tumultuous year, and when the present chairman had decided to step down, of which I have to publicly thank, because he did a huge amount of work. And I'm sorry that he didn't feel he was able to continue on, but I think he can certainly hold his head up high about what he has done and achieved as chairman over a very, very difficult year. But all of that being said, I suppose a lot of people had come to me and asked me would I put my name forward. People were looking for a bit of change. Certainly, I think we're all probably guilty of this, but once we're in roads, we can stay there for a long time, or sometimes we're left too long. And, you know, I think change is good. It's not that we know it all. And there's a great balance there now in the committee between those with experience and those who are new. And equally, I think it's important to say we're going to have five women at the top table, which is great.
We are, as you say, and you reference Fergus McGee there, he had an awful lot on his plate, because it has been a tough old year, a turbulent 12 months. To some extent, maybe that tide has already begun to turn. What else do you think that you need to achieve over your tenure at Mary?
Well, I suppose there were financial concerns, and there's debt to be dealt with. And at the end of the day, it's an organisation that must meet its legal requirements. Those have been embedded now with new governance and new methods by which there's accounting done. And we have a new auditor who has, you know, performed very well. He's only had a very short period of time. And I think the clubs are very anxious to have the openness and transparency of what is actually going on, and that they're kept informed on a regular basis. And that would be hopeful. I would be hopeful that the treasurers now will be able to put that in hand. We also, the reality is, Greg, and there's no point in sugarcoating it, as one might say, it costs a huge amount of money to run a club. It costs even more to run a county. And those costs are based on the fact that there's greater regard now for the volunteers who are our players, and the supports that they all need at all levels, at underage level and all the way through. We have a very good hurling opportunity now, I must say, in listening to what's been happening, and with Satanta going well, and hopefully they'll do equally as well at the weekend. That's tremendous to see. So we have so many young people that have to be cared for, and I think that is the biggest thing that has to be dealt with now, is that we get back into a very robust structure for our academy, and that we're working there in supporting our young people to help them develop. Not everyone is going to be a county player, but at the same time, they all should be afforded the opportunity of a little bit more intensity in their coaching and training, and give them that opportunity, if they don't make it, that they would actually lead their clubs. And the clubs need leadership as well, on and off the field. And that's what is hugely, hugely important to me. So if we can work together, and I think that's, as I said last night, if everyone who is elected works to the best of their ability, and everyone who's employed would do likewise, then certainly I would hope that we would be in the headlines for the right reason as opposed to the wrong reason.
Yeah, and you talked about the academy, and the turbulent 12 months really kicked off, I suppose, with Carl Lacey's decision to quit his role as chief of Donegal's academy. You talked about the importance of GEA. But it survives with the future, and there's so many competing sports out there now, soccer, rugby, whatever it might be. It's really important that there is a strong, well-organised academy there that can, you know, maximise the potential. We always have to have an eye on the future, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's hugely important, and all the clubs are trying to do the same. And I think it's very important that we in County Donegal would have a structure, a coaching structure that, you know, ties in very much and works very smoothly between your underage. A lot of clubs, even like ourselves, have very young children now starting on their skills, moving that through all the way into county. And if we can get that right, it's very obvious from other counties that that is what works very well. Now, it takes a lot of talent and it takes a lot of support. And, you know, we have the ATU now in Letterkenny, and we have Finn Valley College, who are doing a huge amount of work in the sports field and sports sciences and everything. So I would hope that the people who are attending those colleges would revert back to their own clubs and to our county and use that knowledge and use that opportunity to develop our young people and their skills base. And the other thing about the GAA, some people are kind of feel it's an alien organisation. It's a very open organisation, and regardless of your ability, you are welcome. Mm. And that's the ethos of our Go games, that's the ethos of our underage, and people can play a part in their club in any way and take enjoyment out of it. And I would be asking that we would see a greater increase in their membership within the county and also our volunteers. And you're quite right in saying that there are other sports, and sport is great. Sport is so, so good for people. It's so good for their mental health. It's so good for everything, their socialisation. And we also have to include, and we do that in a lot of clubs, those who perhaps don't have the physicality that is necessary, yeah, but can still participate. And that is the ethos of the GAA. It is about a sense of belonging, a belonging to a club or a parish or whatever, and that there are opportunities for everyone within the organisation. And off the field, you have SCORE, which is hugely important. We also would need to look at handball, a fantastic skill that has, you know, there's only a few clubs that provide handball now. You know, all of these games, rounders, for example, you know, that all includes people. We have our mothers and others, you have dads and lads. So that is that inclusiveness and an openness to all of the community. And any type of sport, I'm not here, anybody who participates in any type of sport is hugely, hugely beneficial to the athleticism and the mental health of our people.
Yeah, and of course, even people who don't play any form of GEA often benefit from the infrastructure in a community that the GEA provides as well.
It's a reason to go to a game. It's a reason to go to a game. You become interested. You meet people. You know, you get a cup of tea. You have something to talk about. People who might be living on their own love to go, maybe a couple of people together. Sometimes they might have their tea out or they're going to a big game. It's all about a sense of belonging and looking after each other and looking after the people that are our members. And, you know, we have people from abroad as well who are a huge resource to our county. And I'm only speaking of our county, a huge resource to us. And they've done huge amounts of work all over the world. And we are a worldwide organisation, the GAA, and we see a lot of our young people, the first thing they do when they go away is they join the GAA club. Because they know they're welcome and they know they belong.
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes it feels like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, sometimes it feels like some of the biggest detractors of Donegal GAA are from within the county, if you know what I mean, not necessarily from out the county. Sometimes it can feel like you've got, you know, current or former people involved in it pulling in different directions. Do you recognise there is something there and that we all need to try and get on the same direction and be, you know, with the Donegal shirt on, so to speak, from, you know, from Bundoran to Malin and Stranorlar to Burton Port?
Well, that's in every organisation, I might add.
No, don't
ask me the same
no doubt about that. No doubt about that.
They
yeah.
have the same problem. And like, this is not a perfect science, and people are not always happy, and people have different opinions about how things should be done. And I'm not an expert in any of this, but, you know, you just have to get to a balance. And people are entitled to say what they think, but we have to listen to what they have to say too. And you know, you'll always... I've had experience of being in political life, and you've had the them and us, whatever they say in Dublin, you know, up in headquarters, they're always giving out about the same will be about Croke Park. You know, but some of that is lack of communication within all of the organisations, that people don't you know, organisations go on and sometimes you're not as informed as you should be about what's going on, or don't maybe necessarily have the same interest. But I think that's what's hugely important, that we have that line of communication, that members, are informed about what's going on and, what the development plans are, you know, for the next 5 or 6 years in the development of games. So that's in every organisation. And, you know, there are people who played football for us who didn't have the same resources and supports that our people have now, and the same for our hurlers. And they would say, oh, where are they running now? You know, we were hardy, we cycled to the game, we played a game, we went out and we milked cows. You know, you get that, plus the fact that you have to have all of the supports and to reach the athleticism that is necessary now in order to be able to be competitive. So, you know, you have a span from there to there, and that's, you know, it's very hard to fill in that gap, but everybody has a point.
Well, look,
and at the end of the day, it's all about supporting people. And, and, you know, people want success. And we didn't have success at a national level for a long, long time in this county, but we still were very proud county people and very supportive of our clubs and our underage. And it's by moving it up that next step and that next step that you get up to the top level of achievement. And Ulster has always been very competitive, and that has helped us because of that competitive nature within Ulster, whereas you see in other parts, they find the lack of competitiveness has kind of almost drained them from you know, that need within the respective counties.
And
everybody likes to see people doing well.
Yeah, on the positive, as you say, you know, off the pitch, you know, the ship is being steadied, turning in the right direction, the academy getting sorted on the pitch. In fairness to Jim McGuinness's predecessors, you know, we could see an upward tick in terms of you know, just to, he's taking over sort of in an upward mode. That's how I feel anyway. But talking of Jim McGuinness, you know, it is something, even though he's back, you're in there for the first time, there's a freshness. Again, I'm not phrasing it well, but we're heading into 2024 with optimism,
optimism.
Right to be
optimistic
about what's coming down the line.
And we are hopeful and we are anxious that things will work out. But, like, we're not going to win in All-Ireland tomorrow. So we have to build on this.
What? And you promised you'd deliver in All-Ireland the next day, Mary Coughlin.
Jim McGuinness and his team and the under-21 people and our minors and all our underage people, they are all part of a team, a thought process. I'm not going to be interfering in it, nor anybody else. Our job is to make sure that the organisation is run well and that we are in a position to support the needs and the talents of our teams. And that's exactly what we're going to do.
Right.
And there is that optimism out there. Jim and his team are very driven, but he'd have no team if he didn't have the talent. And we have to build on that talent and support the people that are going to go out and put on the jerseys for us.
Okay. Just must mention, I presume the first game that you'll be attending, it's a short wee trip down to Ballyshannon to Father Tierney Park. It's a charity game, Donegal v Roscommon. And the charity partner for that is the North West Hospice. €10 for adults, €5 for older people, students €5. Tickets can be bought online. Have you any views about that whole, I'm not going to be controversial, but about the, I know you can actually pay cash. I don't think an awful lot of people realise you can pay cash for league games. The GEA centrally gave a dispensation, but they got about 50 or 60 grand back off it. No one took them up on it. But in terms of inclusivity, is there anything you can do about accessibility? So older people, yes, they can pay €5 for that game, but they have to get the ticket online. And I know there are some partnerships with shops, but you know, coming from a rural part of the world as well, Mary, that doesn't suit anyone. Is there anything for 2024 within your gift that we can sort of at least maybe even have one turnstile cash for games? Or is there anything you can do there? Or do you think anything needs looking at?
This is where you have the balance of governance, where you have to have accountability for people who go through the gate. And that is, as you can appreciate, hugely important. I've heard of this now. What we do in our club is we have a tap. So you tap your card or The other thing, I might just now take the opportunity. Our season tickets are open. Great opportunity to buy a present for someone. There'll be club passes available, which equally would be a lovely present for someone, where you could buy all your county games, and then all you have to have is your little card. But I do appreciate there is a view and an issue out there, and we'll see what we can do to smooth it out. But I have to say that one of the governance issues was about the fact that the use of cash poses its own difficulties from an accounting point of view. But I do appreciate what you're saying. And look, we're doing as much as we can to be as inclusive. So let's take the opportunity now on Highland Radio to say to people, if you have an older person in the house, why don't you buy them a club card as a present, which is something then they won't have to be concerned about if they want to go to a game anywhere. And also, don't forget, our under-21s are on Saturday. And Satanta are playing in Newry on Sunday as well, and a huge opportunity for them in an intermediate semi, All-Ireland semi-final.
Brilliant.
So there's
stuff.
Plenty going on still, even though it's the back end of the season.
Yeah, okay. Who said split season would slow things down? All right then. Mary Coughlin, thanks for your time. Best of luck in your new position. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Right, take care. Bye-bye. That's Mary Coughlin, former Tánaiste, of course, but now Donegal GEA's first female chairperson. Okay, back with more after these. Okay, the December Fisheries Council, at which next year's quotas for Irish fishers were due to be set, has finished in Brussels. A bit of a mixed bag, I suppose you could say, for Ireland in terms of pelagic stocks. There has been an increase in mackerel, but it's kind of like a reduction if you take into account the Brexit effect. 23% increase in blue whiting, 20% increase in boarfish, 20% increase in northwest herring, 17% increase in tuna, and finally a 23% reduction in Atlantoscandia herring. Okay, Aidan O'Donnell is CEO of the Irish Fish Processors Organisation. What do you think of that? Decent.
Morning, Greg. Decent. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's
yes,
our pleasure.
It's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
For the Northwest, the key species of interest for our processors and vessels are mackerel, blue whiting, herring to a certain extent, and horse mackerel. And we have some increases in mackerel, but they've been offset by significant losses because of the Brexit transfer. We're all aware of the fact that the EU gave 25% of its quotas to Britain as part of Brexit, and incredibly, 40% of the value of this transfer came from Ireland. So we're still suffering from this. We're still suffering from a flawed common fisheries policy. And these things need to be addressed if we're going to have a sustainable fishery into the future.
And you believe this type, the type of increases we're talking of, 60% in haddock, ETC, and what other stuff we've mentioned, you don't believe that is a positive sign for the future of the industry?
Well, it's the mackerel transfer from Denmark, it's a positive sign. It's a first step. It's a paradigm for what we need to do in the future. We need to work together. We need to have a strategy to reverse the decline of the sector. We have an amazing resource. We have a marine space that's seven times our landmass. We have a very sustainable stock out there, but unfortunately, Ireland only gets 15% of this by volume. So that's not a fair deal. That's a deal that needs to be addressed. We have a situation of decline, continuous decline, failure of effective policy, essentially. And worse still, and unbelievably, we have, in the middle of all of this, access to foreign fleets from Norway that are not members.
All right, that
attacks three times our quota in our own waters. Norwegian vessels out there.
Okay, the connection just broke down a little bit there. So, no, that's fine. We'll bear with it. So you talked of the decline, and we can put that into numbers as well. You know, this is not just fear-mongering, if you pardon the expression. You know, we can actually see where we're at, and concerns that, you know, we're going to, the worst is yet to come in the not-too-distant future, Aidan.
Yeah, the problem we have is the Brexit situation is not going away. But we have another series of cuts this year in our quotas because of the transfer. The reality is our sector has only grown by about 1% in GDP over a five-year period, whilst the Norwegians, for example, have grown theirs multiple times. At that level, And we really need to get our act together and form a strategy and a policy to reverse the decline.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, thank you very much for that. I do appreciate your time. That's Aidan O'Donnell there, CEO of the Irish Fish Processors Organisation. As I say, it is a bit of a mixed bag. There is some good news in there. Very interested as well to speak to others from within the fishing industry. Hi, Greg. Can you please ask Mary what's being done to properly train coaches at club level? Every single underage team is managed and coached by parents. Should parents be coaching or managing their own children to the detriment of other children? The win at all costs at underage is not developing real talent, but at underage, is there, I mean, you know, at the very young age, there isn't really winning as such, is there? I get where you're coming from. I just don't know who else does it. You know, there, and I see it myself, it's the parents that have that passion and come in, and it's not perfect, of course, but in small communities, you know, we know the communities that we're talking of, who else is going to come in and give all the time that they do and boss people back and forward and make sure everyone's there and kitted out and all that type of stuff? I get where you're coming from, but if it's not the parents, who is it going to be, in especially in the smaller clubs? Okay. Right, let us take a quick break. Now, a deal has been secured that will house a number of international protection applicants in temporary accommodation at Cavern Garden Bed and Breakfast, located just off the N15. Now, Cavern Garden is, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 kilometres the north side of Ballyshannon. 91 refugees, as I mentioned, described as adult male international protection applicants, will be housed in 29 rooms. We don't know how long they're going to be there, but we know there is a one-year contract to begin with, signed with the provider. Independent Deputy Marion Harkin joins us on the show now. Thanks for your time, Marion. I do really appreciate it. What's your reaction to this news? My initial reaction is that this is a very, you know, it's a very rural part of the county. Much of the county is. But anyway, do you have any concerns, or do you welcome this move?
Well, it was myself who brought this to the attention of the public through yourselves and Ocean FM. As soon as I received the information yesterday afternoon, I made a call immediately to check if there had been any community engagement, if anybody had been informed about this. And I was told that no, that there hadn't been. So I thought the best way to bring it to the attention of the public, as I believe it should be and it needs to be, is to alert the local radio stations, which is precisely what I've done, so that people know. Because we had a situation in Boyle recently, a couple of weeks back, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, where it was brought to the attention of all of the local public representatives that I think it was 18 or 20 young men arrived in Boyle into a building, and that nobody knew. They arrived at night and nobody knew anything about it. And people were annoyed that they weren't aware that this was happening. And when I got the notice then about Ballyshannon, about Cavern Garden, I thought the best idea was to let people know what the department have planned. And I believe, though I don't want to say this because I haven't been officially informed, but I've heard on the grapevine that there may be a meeting tonight. And if there is, certainly, I will attend that to listen to people, to hear what they have to say, to hear their concerns, because I've attended such meetings in a number of locations recently and tried to work with people, tried to work with community engagement teams, so that people are not left feeling as if they have, you know, no proper information, and that nobody consults them in any way.
What reaction have you been getting since you made this public? As you mentioned, you believe there is a meeting this evening. You know, what are the concerns? Because I understand why you feel it's important to get it out there. But, you know, obviously there's going to be an awful lot of people that will jump on this, and they may not even be people from the local area. I've already seen this flagged down as far as Cork and Dublin, and this is it. This is the plantation. This is what's happening in your area. Yeah. And instantly, as soon as that information was out there, people are using it. Some might say abusing it. I don't know. That's up for individuals to make up their own mind. But were you conscious of that? You have to balance it up, do you? And you have to say, well, what's in the public interest versus a potential negative fallout?
Absolutely. And I think one of the best quotes I've heard in recent times was a quote used very recently in the Dáil, that this issue is being discussed in every house in the country except Leinster House. And 3 weeks ago, I, on Leaders' Questions, spoke very frankly to the Taoiseach. And I asked him, as leader of the country, to speak about this, to open up the debate, to let people know the reality of what is happening, because people don't know. And it's in a situation like that that lies and mistruths and other things can flourish. But the question, I suppose, comes down to, do the people of Cavan Garden, Ballyshannon, the local area, have a right to know beforehand if a number of asylum seekers are going to be located in their area? And my answer to that is very much yes, because at the end of the day, if 91 people are arriving next Tuesday, a week after, a month after, 3 months after, the community of that area are the people who will have to manage with this situation, live with it, try to find ways of managing it, not the keyboard warriors from elsewhere, or those who say that anybody who puts this information into the public domain is trying to stir up trouble. The last thing anybody wants is that. But the very least that any community deserves, in my view, is consultation, information.
And information, and I think if you read through the information, as far as I can see, what this scheme is that you come here as an international protection applicant. These fellas will be given a PPSN number and able to work in 6 months. We know even if your application is refused, there's no obligation on you to leave. You can just stay here. That's you know, they say, right, you've been refused, but the majority, it seems, stay. I mean, what is actually our system here? Because it seems you come here, you can work after 6 months, and even if you're refused, you just crack on, and in the meantime you get accommodation, you get a limited payment, but you can start working in 6 months. So what is the actual system? It seems to be pretty much just come here and that's it.
We have a system that is broken, and nobody is speaking about it, nobody is talking about it. And part of the reason for that is that as soon as you say that, you have people immediately saying, trying to stir up trouble, far right, all of these kind of phrases. When what we're trying to look at is a phenomenon that's been in other European countries for many years. I certainly seen that when I was in Brussels for 15 years. I saw the impacts of it, and now we're seeing it in Ireland. We have a system, as you said, that doesn't work. I put in questions to the minister there recently about numbers arriving each year, how many were refused asylum, and how many of those were deported. And the figure actually is just under 8% of those who were refused leave to remain were actually deported. And nobody could give me any further information regarding...
Like, is the PPSN number revoked at that point? Are we still taking tax if they do happen to work? Are we still taking tax or providing benefits to people who...
I just got the raw figures. I mean, when you get figures, then after that you start to ask other questions, and I presume it is revoked, though I again would have to check that. But it's just that we just don't know what is happening. And the part of the problem is, in my view, that the conventions that we have in place for asylum seekers were put in place after World War II, when refugees came with barely the clothes on their back, walking hundreds, thousands of miles sometimes trying to get to safety.
Yes.
Now we have a very different situation where people will fly in some of the time with documents, some of the time without, some of the time they have documents before they arrive.
Well, they can't get on the plane. They can't get on a plane or a boat without documents. And some point between A and B, they're lost. Okay, listen, we might come back to you on this after the public meeting as well, but I do have to take a break for the news. We do appreciate you speaking to us, but I think that there are basic questions that anyone's entitled to know. Like, for instance, like there's no other part of society where we don't have knowledge of, except this, really. It, you know, like, I think if you lose the right to stay here, if you you're refused, like, is your PPSN number taken off you, or is it not, or what? Anyway, listen, thank you for your time, as always. Take care of yourself. That was Independent Deputy Marion Harkin. The news is going to be a minute late. My apologies. We'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices.